Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget J. Paul Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Welcome to What's Next. I'm Jay Moran, and in the next hour, we're going to be talking with Dr. Karen King. Dr. King is Commissioner of Public Advocacy for Erie County. She is also Executive Director of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women. Dr. King, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
And you did tell me earlier to call you Karen, so we'll probably call you Karen and make you a little more comfortable there for the rest of this time, because there's a lot to talk about. And we can maybe perhaps get into some of your work, of your PhD work, which is actually quite fascinating. But the Commission on the Status of Women has been in the news with the dedication of the monuments that are now in front of Old Erie County Hall. And these are part of the Trailblazing Women of Western New York Monument Project. This is great. We have three monuments now in front of Old County Hall of women. And this is not something that's found in a lot of spaces in the United States or around the world. Isn't that the case? Honoring women.
That is the case, Jay. And we have literally changed the landscape here in Western New York with the placement of these first three statues in front of Old County Hall. So Mr. George Washington is in good company now, surrounded by three trailblazing women. It's a really important project. It's a public art project. It is there for the public to enjoy. It's free. It's outdoors. I encourage everyone to stop by and take a look at the statues, read about these very, very important women, and find out why their contributions were so significant to the development of Erie County.
I have some friends coming down later today. We're going to be going for a downtown walk, and we're going to make sure we go by so we can see the work here. There's so much I want to get into about that, but I always love hearing about the background of these kinds of efforts. Because if we look around, you're saying, there's George Washington there. I mean, it seems to be that's where he was meant to be. Somebody made an effort once upon a time to make sure that was there. That has its own story. Now these monuments for these three women have their own stories. So where did this all begin?
Well, to your point, first of all, the women are woefully underrepresented in the public realm in terms of statues and monuments across the country, actually, across the world. And of course, there's a long, rich history of valorizing men's accomplishments in our society. We have countless monuments to men. A lot of them center around generals and war heroes, but certainly other representations. So we had a conference way back in 2017. It was an economic justice conference. And one of our colleagues said something like, there just aren't very many or any statues of women in Western New York. And of course, everyone agreed. And as soon as those words were uttered, I said, oh, here comes a project. And that's pretty much what happened. So in 2018, we formally organized our committee. It was a steering committee made up of a wide cross-section of community members, museum curators, scholars, historians, people who work in the community on the ground providing services. We wanted to get feedback from women and men of all walks of life to find out who they thought should be represented. And what was really important to us was that it spoke to the fabric of the community.
Okay.
So we came up with Louise Bethune, who is the first professional woman architect in the United States who designed the Lafayette Hotel. Geraldine Sitak Green, a member of the Seneca Nation and a expert in maintaining the culture and the language of the Seneca Nation. And of course, Mary Talbert, who was a world-renowned human rights and civil rights activist who laid the groundwork for the anti-lynching legislation, which actually just came to fruition rather recently. So these are women who have made significant contributions to our community who you don't hear a lot about.
No.
You know? In some circles you do, if you study history and women's history in particular. So we thought it was important to lift their stories and give them their due.
You know, it's the one Mary Talbert, I'm actually familiar with because she was a main character in a historical novel, City of Light, by Lauren Belfer, which was a terrific read, which really focused on the city of Buffalo. And she had a kind of an interesting part in that as well. But I'm not as familiar with either, you know, Geraldine Sitak Green or Louise Bethune. As you're probably going through this process, you and your committee, you know, you're probably getting those questions. Tell me more about these. What these women? You know, what makes them stand out about others? Maybe, like you said, you talked about Louise Bethune. She, designed the Lafayette Hotel here in downtown Buffalo. You know, but what else can you tell us about her?
Well, part of the benefit of doing a project like this is learning yourself. So right. I'm not a historian, but we have...
But you became one, at least for this project.
Of sorts. I know historians might argue with you on that one. Mm. But we had members of our committee who were experts on all three women. So we all were learning as we embarked on this journey. And, of course, Bethune is an interesting character. She designed the Lafayette Hotel as well as several other buildings throughout Western New York. She was very interested in designing schools. Those were one of her favorite buildings to design. But she also was an advocate for equal pay back at a time when that wasn't really even a conversation because women were so rarely part of that paid economy. But she took herself out of the running for the exposition because she found out that women were only going to get paid half of what the men were going to get paid. So that was one of the earliest stances in favor of equal pay. So she was a fierce advocate for equality for women. And of course, what can you say about Mary Talbert? Just an instrumental figure in the civil rights movement here in the United States, but also in human rights. She spoke all over the world, which a lot of people don't realize. We tie her to, of course, the Niagara movement, right. The forerunner to the NAACP, the founder of the Phyllis Wheatley Club. But she was a staunch advocate for human rights and understood that connection between civil rights and human rights and how they're intricately involved. And Geraldine Sitak Green, the keeper of the culture of the Seneca Nation people. And let's remember that we are all on Seneca land right now. And of course, at Old County Hall, that was all at one time all Seneca land.
Right. Yeah, that's a great nod to that for sure, because it is something that is easily forgotten, even in conversations we've had with members of the Seneca Nation. You know, you just find yourself just kind of slipping into a very ignorant area of conversation and need to be reminded of what you said, of the historical, you know, this is, in fact, the nation, you know, Seneca land here that we're generally on in Western New York. I was curious, though, about the conversations. Get back to them just a little bit. Was it kind of fierce debate about this? Was it, or was it just everybody was going to be happy that they knew that they were going to have an end product once it was all said and done that was going to be representing women in front of County Hall?
Well, we knew it was important to make sure we had representation from the African-American community because the African-American community played such a huge role in forging this culture and this community here in Western New York, as well as indigenous people, the Seneca Nation. So we wanted to make sure that we were being representative. We knew there are a lot of white women that have been historically recognized in our area for the work they've done, and that's great.
Right.
But when you're doing a public art project, you want to ensure that you're doing it for the public.
Sure.
So it wasn't really difficult. We did get a lot of names, some of the usual suspects that came up, you know, over and over again. But we were really trying to find people that were maybe not as readily recognized or acknowledged. So that process wasn't difficult. You know, some of the more challenging aspects were figuring out how we were going to finance the project.
Of course,
of course. When this idea came to fruition and I approached the county executive about it, I assumed that we would just be responsible, this committee, in doing a fundraising campaign. And of course, you know that County Executive Mark Poloncarz is a big proponent of public art. So when I proposed this idea to him, he said, well, how much is it going to cost? And we had gotten some estimates, you know, based on what other monument projects had cost pre-COVID, of course. And it was around $500,000.
Okay.
And I told him that. And he said, okay, we'll figure that out. You know, we can get that money. And, you know, I almost fell out of my chair. I said, really?
Maybe I should go bring a project to him.
But he said, this is a really important project. And I said, I know. And we did, of course, some fundraising. We wanted to create awareness around the project because we were going to get a large portion from the county legislature. So also a nod to our chairwoman, April Baskin, and the entire legislature for understanding the importance of this project. So a large portion was funded through the county. But we also received donations from foundations, Seneca Gaming Corporation, the Baird Foundation, individual donors. We held a series of fundraising events. But at the end of the day, it was really the county that stepped up to get this project, you know, through the finish line.
Right.
And of course, when we started the project, it was pre-COVID. And we had started to gain some traction. You know, we identified who the three women were going to be. We talked about a potential location.
So that wasn't predetermined that it was going to be an old county hall?
No, it was a journey.
Really?
Everything is in a public art project, Jay. Public art projects are complicated.
They're adventures, yes, of course.
So when COVID hit, of course, we all had to pivot. And really, the last thing people were thinking about was raising money for public art projects. We were very focused on providing, you know, the immediate needs of our community. And of course, the county was instrumental in that. But we continued to do our research and explore possible locations. And as we shifted back out of the COVID era, back to more, I guess, what regular times we would say, we initially identified the library. The public library.
Okay, sure.
Because it would have to be county property to just make it more feasible easy. But we ran into some engineering issues. So I've learned a lot about infrastructure and what will work and what will not work.
That's interesting. I mean, can you give me a anecdote on that?
Well, we were originally planning to put it on the ramp.
Okay.
As you enter the library, but that's a vaulted ceiling. So it's not solid, and there was issues with drainage.
Okay.
I mean, I'm getting very technical
now. But I appreciate that, yeah.
And it was going to be extremely cost prohibitive to have it there.
Okay.
Which, you know, would have been a great location. And the county executive said, we can't do it there.
Okay.
And he said, we got to do it somewhere else. And the two of us went back and forth, like, where are we going to do it? He literally stood up. Looked out his window. He said, what about across the street? And I said, where? He said, right there. I said, done. So it was our land.
Okay.
Or, well, you know,
county
counties
land,
before
right?
the Seneca, or after rather. We began exploring a feasibility plan on what the actual physical placement of these statues would entail. And, you know, not to disrupt the environment. So there's a lot of planning that goes into these projects.
I appreciate
and we
that.
Weren't just placing one statue, we were placing three.
Right.
So then we began the request for proposal process to identify the artists for the project, as well as the designers of the actual site and the construction. So all of that has to be done through a process, you know, when you request proposals for to hire or go into contract with vendors. So that whole piece was happening.
Right. Oh, that's fine. Yeah.
While we were talking about what we wanted these monuments to represent, you know, and what was going to be the backstory. So we also did create a website, which was an educational vehicle for people to learn about the project and the women. So we did a narrative project where we had local people read the character of each of the women in the first person. And if you go to our website, you can hear a 2 or 3 minute clip, you know, in the first person. Mary Talbert will tell you her history, how she came to Buffalo, you know, from Oberlin, and, you know, what her history was, and Sita, and Louise Bethune. And it is a great way to spark interest in these three women. So we continue to have awareness events to promote the project. And we've been doing this for a while, so really officially since 2018, when we began the RFP process to identify the artists. That was another major hurdle. When we secured the funding, another, and then the design process of figuring out how we wanted these women to look. And of course, when you're working with artists, you certainly want to give them a lot of latitude. You bring them in, you know, so they can share their expertise, just like the scholars and the historians. And that was an interesting process as well.
Sure.
And I am so pleased that the project is completed.
I bet you're pleased.
And that we will be celebrating and commemorating these incredible trailblazing women this Monday, which is also Women's Equality Day.
Okay.
So August 26th, it's a significant date that was chosen with intention because it is the anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment.
Ah, very good. Well, and I think Louise Bethune would be very pleased that you picked that particular day.
I think they all three would be really pleased. But in addition to the actual monument project, so this is a whole ecosystem of recognizing the significance of trailblazing women in our community. In addition to the bronze statues, we are also going to be creating a plaque program where we'll place plaques of women throughout Erie County. So we will have a literal trail.
Oh, okay.
Where you'll be able to download a map of the location of the statues, of course, and these plaques. In addition to that, we are also creating a living Trailblazing Women archive where we are recording video segments of living Trailblazing Women here in our community from all walks of life, and that will be exhibited at the Buffalo History Museum. So we're in the process of recording those videos currently, and they will be archived. And you will be able to hear the stories of women who are performing what we call everyday acts of trailblazing.
Sure.
So some are more well-known in the community, but some you may have never heard of, but play an integral part in their immediate community. Because the importance here is lifting up women's stories, giving voice to the contributions that women make in our community every day.
Our guest this morning on What's Next is Dr. Karen King. She's the Commissioner of Public Advocacy here in Erie County and also the Executive Director of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women. We're talking about the Trailblazing Women of Western New York Monument Project. And as Dr. King just did, she teased us into my next questions about this trail that's coming up. We'll give you a chance to go over your notes on that, Dr. King. We'll take a break and we'll come back with more. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Did you know that WNED PBS is always working on great new local shows for you to watch? Documentaries like Kleinhand's Gift to Buffalo, which tells the story of Buffalo's Music Hall.
The hall is very intimate, and that intimacy makes everyone who comes in here feel a part of our family.
Fun and educational series like Compact Science.
Believe it or not, peppers are technically fruits.
And Shakespeare's greatest hits featuring some of his best-known soliloquies and monologues.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of.
You can watch them all on our website at wned.org/local shows. While you're there, check out the show pages and mini websites for additional content such as bonus features, photo galleries, and lesson plans. Find it all at wned.org/local shows.
Hey, educators. You've been asking for it, and it's here. Reading Rainbow Stories is ready to help your students stay on track. Each story is paired with activities to help students strengthen cross-curricular skills such as math and business in Lemonade for Sale.
Let's keep track of our sales.
Science and health in Germs Make Me Sick.
Usually, you feel better after a day or two.
Thanks.
But if you don't, you should see a doctor.
And history in Following the Drinking Gourd.
One of the worst things about slavery is that families were separated. Fathers, mothers, and children were oftentimes sold to different people.
check out the new Reading Rainbow Stories collection on PBS Learning Media today to help your students stay on track.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. Today, we're talking about the Trailblazing Women of Western New York Monument Project. And with us, one of the individuals who was right in the middle of the whole planning and development process, Dr. Karen King, Commissioner of Public Advocacy in Erie County and Executive Director of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women. So this trail part of this project, it sounds like a great idea. Now that's going to give a chance to expand and highlight some of the many contributions. The idea that we have to highlight, to say that I highlight contributions of women in Western New York, I mean, I think if you go in any office now or any place, you're going to find that, there's contribution is not the right word. We'll have to work on my vocabulary there. But let's talk about some, who can you tell me about that, who's going to be involved, or is this something we want to keep under wraps until more of a public kind of unveiling?
Well, we're just at the beginning stages. Right now, we're taking suggestions and recommendations from the community. And I've already received several emails requesting certain women be recognized, and we'll put together a list, and we'll review it, and we'll get some additional feedback, and then we'll make some decisions in terms of how many, where they can be placed. And of course, then you run into certain logistical issues.
As we've seen with the
placement
monuments.
isn't Erie County space, you know, how that has to happen. So when you do a project like this, you know, there's the idea, you know, the inception of the idea and why it's important, the significance of it. That's the fun part. But then, of course, making sure that you are adhering to the logistical processes that have to take place, you know, the less glamorous portion of the project.
Less glamorous, but you can see
but important.
But you can see the value of it, especially this, if you want this to be a trail where people are either, probably be a little difficult to walk all of it or whatever the case may be, but where it can have a certain flow to it, I guess.
Sure. And, you know, you see tours going on all the time, you know, Explore Buffalo and all kinds of tours that are happening throughout the community. If people are able to use their phones to identify where the plaques are, and most of them we hope will be clustered so they're somewhat in walking distance, but we're not sure.
Right.
Because we have to find out who the women are going to be, and we want to place the plaque in an area, a geographical area that's significant to them and the work that they were doing.
Okay. All right. But and now what about, so it sounds like you're still gathering then?
Oh, yeah.
Information and
so,
suggestions?
I want to get through Monday with the official celebration of these statues.
Sorry.
and let the dust settle for a minute. Right. But we are also, while this project has been going on, we did start the narrative, the Living Trailblazing Narrative Project, which I'm also very excited about. And which doesn't require nearly any infrastructure other than a camera and the ability to participate. And we're going to launch this, I hope, by the end of the year at the History Museum. This part of the project's really exciting to me because I love the idea of identifying living women who are doing this work right now.
Right.
And I love the idea that we are going to draw from women of all ages and backgrounds doing all kinds of different work.
Right. So then, for that part of it then, I mean, where are we in terms of the women that you're going to be highlighting?
We currently have five in the archive, and I hope to record another five or six before the end of the calendar year.
Okay.
But the beauty of this project is it's a living, breathing project, and it's ongoing. We can just keep adding to the collection and archiving it, and it will continue to grow over time.
Sure. And you're not going to tell me who the five women are right now?
We will share that information on our website, and we are going to have more of a formal launch. We did have a soft launch during our Women's History Month.
Right.
But we will continue with that project more formally after Monday.
All right. I'm just going to put my...
something to look forward to.
It's always something to look forward to. I'm just going to put my suggestion in for Eva Doyle to be one of the people that you recognize. But I don't want you to show your hand.
Yeah, she's a great one. Yeah.
Don't show your hand
Eva's
to
fabulous.
Me. But I would appreciate that. So it's great to see this. And obviously, it's exciting because there's a lot of history in it, and it's maybe a new way of looking at issues, right? And it gives us a chance to highlight things. What are the responses that you're getting? Are all, I would think, if not all positive, most certainly, it's got to be a large amount of enthusiasm for these efforts.
Well, so far, it's all been positive. Yeah. It's all been enthusiastic. People are really excited by this project. Of course, I'm sure some folks will say, well, what about so-and-so? Or what about so-and-so? Yeah. How come she wasn't recognized? And okay, you know, everyone has an opinion, and that's great, and they should share that, because if we can't create a bronze statue, there's the opportunity for a plaque. Or if it's someone who is still with us, there's an opportunity for their story to become archived, you know,
right,
in real time. So there are options to recognize these women and to elevate their stories and hear their voices.
Sure. Sure. I mean, you said it's going to be at the History Museum. Is it going to be an ongoing exhibit? How's that going to work?
Well, it's going to be a traveling exhibit, and we will be using technology, of course.
Oh.
And we will be able to hear their stories on our phones.
Okay.
So, but we will have the initial launch formally at the History Museum, where the maquettes of the trailblazing statues will also be housed. The maquette is the model the artist makes prior to creating the final statue. So we have those, and they will be part of the collection that the museum will be curating.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the artist. Or is it artist or artists behind the monuments?
Well, we originally started with three, because our original intention, first we thought we'd use one artist, but when the artist said to us, there's no way we can make three statues with this timeline.
Okay.
You know, and that's part of this educational process of what it takes to create a
statue.
You're
becoming a logistics master.
Yeah. So we originally hired three artists. One of them unfortunately had to back out because of another conflict. So we chose Jiwang Che and Vinnie Bagwell. Vinnie created Mary Talbert, and Jay, as he affectionately likes to be called, created Bethune and Geraldine Sitah Green. And it's a lot of work creating a statue.
Right.
And we were very fortunate to work with such talented artists. So for the most part, it was a really great experience.
How did you go about
hiccups?
Yeah. How did you? I bet. How did you go about identifying them?
That was through a lengthy process. We sent out a request for proposals across the nation. It was a national search. We had a team of advisors who came from the art world and the monument world, who were experts. We narrowed it down to three. We sent out requests for proposals. We reviewed the proposals, and based on the criteria that we had created in the proposal, we identified through a scoring process. It's a very involved process, and there's a lot of oversight involved because this is public art.
Of course.
And then the three artists were selected, and then after that process, they were requested to provide a proposal of what their vision was for the project. Timeline and budget.
You know, I'm interested because you mentioned we've talked about public art and what goes on in behind it. And one of the great things I think that's been going on here in the last decade in Buffalo and Western New York is the emergence of public art. It's really, I think, a sensation. It's really added a nice flavor to our community. But what about, again, you're learning on the run here, Dr. King, of all these different processes. So what about public art? What would be something about developing public art here in Erie County that we probably don't understand, right? Because I'm sure that kind of, there's probably a sense that, oh, it's simple. There's a building, put this up. We can paint this, right? I mean, I'm sure there's that kind of simplistic approach to it, but like you said, there's a lot that goes into it.
Well, the infrastructure piece.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Understanding
there.
Where are you going to place this? What materials are you going to use? If it's outdoors, how will it weather over time? What is the landscape going to look like? And we were, and forgive me for not mentioning Joy Keebler. She was our landscape architect who designed the beds and the space around where the statues are placed in front of Old County Hall. And she did a phenomenal job. And she's so talented and a joy to work with.
Nice.
Joy's a joy to work with.
Yes.
But yeah, the infrastructure piece and the mechanics of it, you know, watching the actual statues come off the trucks, how they were lifted off the trucks and placed, and the actual mechanics of what that took, that was fascinating to me. And also had its own separate timetable, its own separate group of people who, you know, their priorities are very different than an artist.
Right.
But together, you know, it's very similar to a prior experience I had. You know, my former career was in television and commercial production. And that's collaborative work. You work with a crew. You know, you got your director, who's like your artist, and you've got all the people making it happen behind the scenes that you don't necessarily recognize or see, but they're making it happen. They're hanging the lights. They're making sure the sound is working. They're editing. They're creating this collaborative project. And that is what a public art project is. It's a collaborative process. So it was really interesting to participate in that.
Yeah, it sounds like both a lot of work, but it sounds like you really enjoyed it.
Well, there were days that I didn't enjoy it as much. You know, I had to be, you know, kind of like the bad guy, the producer at times where I said, no, you know, we can't spend this money. Yeah. You know, we're going to be over budget. No, we have to go this way. And, you know, sometimes people didn't want to hear what I had to say, but we pushed through it.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. Again, yes, yes, you did. And the product is there to be seen right in front of Old County Hall. You can see the three statues of Louise Bethune, Mary Talbert, and Geraldine Sita Green, the Trailblazing Women of Western New York Monument Project. That's what we're talking about here with Dr. Karen King, Commissioner of Public Advocacy here in Erie County. You know, since you mentioned Joy Keebler, it sparked another project that came out of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women a few years back. Joy was I guess, architect or landscape architect that developed a beautiful project out by the Niagara River in Tonawanda that is there to honor victims of domestic violence.
Right.
And it's something that I know your office is working on to make sure that it has lots of upkeep and it brings great attention to it. Why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Sure. The Tribute Garden, which is located in one of our beautiful county parks, Isleview Park, right along the Niagara River. It's a beautiful space, and it was created to recognize and honor those that whose lives were impacted by domestic violence, survivors, people who are lost to domestic violence, and their families and friends. And it's a beautiful space, a meditative space, and I encourage everybody to go and visit. There's a beautiful bike and walking path there right along the river. We've been fortunate, once the actual garden was constructed, we've been fortunate to partner with our master gardeners from Cornell Cooperative Extension. It's a group of dedicated, very talented gardeners who tend to the beds on a regular basis. And then towards the end of September to kick off Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which starts in October, we have the plantathon. And we work with high school and middle school students and the gardeners to prep the garden for fall, you know, to do some weeding and some planting. The students learn about the significance of the space, why it's there. They learn a little bit about planting from the gardeners, which is great. And we also have domestic violence service providers there to share information about resources that are available across Erie County. And in addition to that, we follow up with the high school students. The Commission on the Status of Women hosts a summit in February, which is also Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. And every year for the last several years, we've hosted over 100 students from across the area that come for a morning filled with information about the resources. It's a very student-driven event. We work closely with a group of students to plan the event, and that happens in February, and many of those students have participated in the plantathon in September.
Nice. You know, I'm thrilled to talk about this just because when it was dedicated, I had a chance to talk to Joy Keebler, also one of your predecessors at the Commission on the Status of Women, Saree Becker, and also Mary Travers Murphy when she was with the Family Justice Center here in Buffalo, and about the Tribute Garden. And as you were talking about it, I went back to, they were laying the final pieces of that Tribute Garden, and Joy was talking to me about it, and I asked her about, well, like the different paving elements, and, you know, are you going to have, you know, bricks with people's names on it? And a very poignant statement, she said, one thing she's learned is we can't have them on the ground because this represents people who never want to be stepped on again. It really is, and I'm so thrilled to hear that of the upkeep that's going on out there, and to continue honoring that space as well. That's really quite wonderful. Another thing that I know that you're working on is trying to get into like an outreach program of sorts with younger people to try to make sure that, you know, they're understanding history, and there maybe can be people who are going to be the next leaders here in Erie County. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, of course, on the heels of the trailblazing event that occurred last night at the Democratic Convention, we have a program called First Amendment, First Vote, which was launched in 2018. We are in partnership with First Amendment, First Vote. Its founder, Melina Carnicelli, was the first woman mayor of Auburn, New York, and also the organizer of the women's marches in Seneca Falls. After the marches of 2017, she gathered a group of like-minded people together to say, how can we keep this momentum going? And we all agreed that that momentum rested in the next generation of voters and future elected officials. And we had identified young girls, high school students, and we came up with the name First Amendment, First Vote, because, of course, the First Amendment is the right to assemble and free speech, which was the vehicle that the suffragists used to get the word out, to promote and eventually get the 19th Amendment added to the Constitution. So we started this project in 2018. There's several cohorts across the state. Western New York is the largest cohort, so we work with several high schools and teachers who we call mentors,
okay,
who are responsible for identifying who the girls will be that to participate. They participate in a fall seminar, which happens in October. And then we have a summit in the spring, in March. The first summit was in Seneca Falls. And
fittingly.
Right. Then we had one in Rochester. We were scheduled to have one in Buffalo, and then COVID hit. So we had to go virtual during that period of time. And then our last one was in Auburn. So the purpose of First Amendment, First Vote is to provide girls with experiential learning opportunities about the process of running for office and governance. Mm. Because as I like to say, girls don't have a confidence problem. Girls have an access to resources problem. The moment you provide resources, watch them fly.
Right.
And all you have to do is look at Title IX and athletics and what has happened with young girls and young women who now can go to a D1 school on a full ride. And you see that once girls have those opportunities to participate, there's no stopping them. So I think much is the same with the process of elected office. And there's a lot of conversation about the role of civic education in school. And students get some exposure to it, but this really offers them an opportunity to build on that experience. So they have an opportunity to sit across the table from an elected official.
Okay.
And that's the roundtable portion of the seminar. And they can ask, you know, April Baskin, you know, why did you want to run for office? Isn't it hard to ask people for money? You know, what happens when people say bad things about you? How do you handle
three
it?
Three great questions.
Right? And how often do they get to ask an elected official that question? And every elected official who's participated in the roundtable loves it. And they all say the same thing. I wish I had this in high school.
Wow.
So we are getting ready for our fall seminar, which will be in October. But I just finished hosting three high school interns who were part of the program at Erie County.
Oh, all right.
And they had a great opportunity. They got to meet commissioners, deputy commissioners, the county executive, the deputy county executive. They learned about the importance of local government. And what a lot of people don't realize is, for the most part, the only real immediate contact you're going to have with government is your municipal or your local government. And they were really quite, I guess they would say, surprised at how expansive it was and how important the county government plays in daily lives. And I said, yeah, because most people don't realize it until there's a problem.
Right.
Until there's an issue. So that was a great opportunity for them. And they're doing, they'll be doing a presentation at the fall seminar on their findings from some research they conducted and their experience about meeting all the different departments and the people that work in public service. Because not everybody wants to run for office. I mean, our goal, of course, is gender parity. We want women represented at all levels of government. But there's many ways to be civically engaged and there's many ways to be involved in public service.
Well, we have a lot to talk about still to come here. We got a few more minutes to go. We're going to take another break and come back and talk with more with Dr. Karen King, the Commissioner of Public Advocacy here in Erie County, the Executive Director of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women, and of course, one of the forces behind the Trailblazing Women of Western New York Monument Project. We'll take a time out, come back with more. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Hey people, Corey here with Compact Civics. If you're from Western New York, you know snow. And unfortunately, you know how damaging those annoying potholes can be. But do you know what's involved in filling those potholes so your car tires can stay intact? Let me put you on. Because maintaining roads involves way more than the average citizen might think. Cities, counties, and states take part in this process. Why, you might ask? Well, a state might be responsible for filling potholes and paving, but a city handles snow plowing and de-icing. These responsibilities are shared among elected officials, road managers, supervisors, and other essential personnel, all so you can drive safely. Try and imagine a city or town without a public works department. No one to manage public buildings like schools or hospitals, or maintain infrastructure we rely on, like roads, bridges, and airports. Can't forget about essential public services like water and sewage. And when those summer months hit, you can forget about public spaces we enjoy, like parks and beaches. We deserve these spaces, and our taxes pay for it all. So, next time you drive across a smooth road or see a snowplow clearing one, appreciate it. Public works are the backbone of what keep our communities and quality of life thriving.
Special thanks to our partners, the Buffalo Presidential Center, whose mission is to explore and share stories about Buffalo and Western New York's contributions to the U.S. presidency and national affairs.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. With us, Dr. Karen King, Commissioner of Public Advocacy here in Erie County, also the Executive Director of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women. I want to just return just briefly to, we went to break talking about these interns that you had. And I love that comment you made. It's not so much about young women needing confidence. And I think most of us who have daughters can tell you that that's not the issue. But resources and accessibility, I guess, is also a part of it, access to those resources. But what about, I'm wondering maybe as you were watching these interns kind of progress through this whole thing, where it's got to be a head-spinning time being in any intern in any office, but to be in county hall with, commissioners and staff members and the county executive, the guy you see on TV all the time, moving about. Can you maybe talk about what you've seen or heard from these young people about how they changed maybe from when they first walked in the door to the person who was leaving at the end of the summer?
I did notice a progression in terms of they were less shy.
Mm-hmm.
They were maybe a little more comfortable in asking questions. But I think they also really developed an appreciation of the level of work that gets performed by a lot of people you don't know. There's a lot of people that work in county government, they're civil servants, and they're there for the long haul, and they're there providing elemental services, in crises and not crises. But I think they really were impressed mm-hmm. with the level of amount of work that goes into running a county on a daily basis.
Right.
So I think that really left an impression on them. But I also think it's the kind of thing where you don't fully appreciate it maybe right away. I said to them, make sure you get business cards. If someone gives you a business card, take it, because that's a contact for you.
Hmm.
You know, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, maybe when you're a college student, you may want to do another internship, or you might want to find out more about a position. Now you have someone in your portfolio of contacts.
Right.
You know, they're part of your team now. That's what I explained to them. And I think that they will understand the full, appreciate it more fully as they progress forward.
It's going to be one of those questions that I don't want to penetrate your modesty here, but you know, how curious were they about you? I mean, here you are, a commissioner in county government. You talked about your TV production background a little bit, and also your education background is very impressive as well. I'm wondering if you saw you're a little bit of yourself in them at that age. Just kind of curious about that interaction.
Well, they did want to know about when I decided I wanted to do this work.
Okay.
And what I did in college.
All right.
And I did explain to them that when I went to college, things were a little different, a different era, and there wasn't so much focus on identifying a career track while you were in high school. And college used to be the place where you would figure that out. Now it seems like by the time you get to college, you better know what direction you're going.
Right.
Which I guess there's pros and cons to that. They all were very focused. You know, they said, you know, one of them wants to get into law. One of them wants to become a doctor. The other one might be law. She's not sure. But I said, you know, when I got to college, I mean, I was already a feminist. You know, I've been a feminist since high school.
Wow.
And, well, the times, Jay. I came of age in the 70s.
That's true.
And I said, I knew that. But I was really exploring what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And I wanted to learn about the world, and I wanted to get a greater understanding of the way power worked and the way feminist theory could be implemented in everyday action. But then I ended up working in production. But I got news for you. Everything I learned as an undergrad helped me inform my work, and then everything I learned on set in production helped me in life and jobs. But they did want to know that story, and I explained that to them. And, you know, they were like, oh, okay. But it was a little different from their experience. But I said, you know, if you know what you want to do, that's great. But, you know, make sure you take advantage of opportunities to learn about all things. Because comprehensive experience is really important. Because they said to me, oh, we thought we were going to just be doing work on the Commission on the Status of Women.
Hmm.
And I said, well, sure, and we can talk about that work, but it's also important that if you run for office as an elected official, you've got to know about a lot of things. You know, you want to be a proponent of equality for women, that's great, but as an elected official, there are a lot of other issues that you have to attend to. The paving of roads, the infrastructure of sewer systems, making sure the water's clean, making sure people have electricity during a storm. I mean, there are a lot of things you have to understand about, particularly at the local, municipal, and county level. So I said, I want you to continue your interest in women's equity issues, but I also want you to understand there's a lot to governing.
But there was an interest, though, in women's equity issues, and there was no doubt about that.
Of course.
That's great to hear, though. Young people.
Yeah. I mean, that's why they're involved in First Amendment, First Vote.
Sure.
You know, that's why they're gravitating towards that, because they have an interest in these issues. And I talked about a Women in Work study that I'm currently engaged in with the help of Cornell's School of ILR, and we're doing a study on women in work here in Western New York. And it's going to be very narrative driven. We're going to be interviewing women about their experience with work. We know there's a pay gap, and we know that women still populate lower paying jobs, but we also want to hear about their experience and their stories. And we're also going to be talking to women from the C-suite all the way down to the women that you don't notice a lot of times that are providing really important work in our daily lives, right? And we really that really came to light during COVID, when essential workers were all of a sudden elevated, child care providers, people in the service industry, in the service sector. So we want to hear stories from women from all walks of life. So that study is going to be kicking off in the next several weeks, actually. We're going to be doing a series of focus groups with women. So we talked about that study. We talked about the different programs that the commission is involved with and collaborates on, and of course, the importance of continually elevating women's voices.
Well, that's really encouraging. And the information that you're going to take from it, though, I mean, you see a place for it to go. You think there are ears out there that are going to welcome
the study? Of course. And of course, it will be informed by data. And, you know, public officials and elected officials like data.
Okay.
But, and data is important. You know, it gives us statistics. But we want to know the story behind the statistics. And hearing firsthand about the experiences of working women is very powerful. And I also think that has a place in terms of moving the needle amongst elected officials in terms of how willing they will be to fight for legislation to continue to address inequities, you know, not just around pay, but, you know, culture, environment, and opportunity.
We only have a couple of minutes left, and we're recording this on Friday. This is going to air Monday, the day of the dedication of the event over at the Old County Hall. But last night, the spotlight was on a woman who has definitely a gunfighter's chance of becoming the next president of the United States, Kamala Harris. You know, I don't necessarily want you to get into any kind of partisan element of this, but from that perspective of moving the needle along, how significant is it to have Kamala Harris in the spotlight right now?
It couldn't be more significant. I mean, it is. She's a trailblazer, and she, of course, stands on the shoulders of the women that came before her, which she readily acknowledges. It's incredibly significant in so many ways, but in particular, for girls and young women to see someone like them represented in this position and to potentially become the president of the United States, you know, like the statues, it's important. Representation matters. It's important that women and girls make up half the population, but yet we don't seem to garner the same attention, the same leadership, the same power that men do. That's changing in many ways and has changed in many ways, but representation is important. It's important for a girl sitting in her wherever she's watching it on her laptop or her phone or her television saying, oh, there's a woman, you know, that can be me.
And what did it say? It was, I think, one of the eye-opening things, but I'm just kind of curious of your take on it. If President Biden announces that he's not going to run, it's going to be Kamala Harris, and this surge of fundraising that came flowing through, what is your characterization or thought on that? Because I found it absolutely remarkable.
Well, I think it signals that people are thirsting and yearning for a change in the way politics are performed in our country. And you know, a lot of the models that are in place have existed for over 100 years, and we're pivoting into the next era. We don't want the political landscape to be acrimonious. We want to be able to engage in informed and respectful dialogue. You know, we can have differences of opinion. We have to figure out how to talk about those in constructive ways. And that is one of the things that comes up in our First Amendment First Vote conversations with young girls who say, God, I don't know if I want to get involved in politics. It's so nasty. So we have to change that. You know, part of this project of democracy is to be able to engage in this discourse in a civil and respectful way. And we have to hear each other. And I think the presidential candidate has really promoted that and expressed the importance of that. And, you know, change is in the air.
I appreciate your perspective. I very much appreciate that perspective, Dr. King. Finally, the call to action. We brought you in to talk about the Trailblazing Women of Western New York Monuments Project. Just what do you want people to know and what do you want them to do when it comes to this?
I want them to take a stroll down to Old County Hall, and I want them to look at the statues, read the signage, which will give you some background about these fabulous trailblazing women and the scope of the project. Sit on the beautiful benches, enjoy the beautiful beds surrounding the statues. Take it in. If you happen to be strolling by at night, the statues are lit up and they look magnificent at night. But remember, this is our public art space museum. There's no admission, there are no doors, there are no lines, just walk right on up.
Well, I so much appreciate your conversation with us this hour, Dr. King. It's been a real pleasure, and thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jay. It's been my pleasure.
Dr. Karen King, Commissioner of Public Advocacy, the Executive Director of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women, and also here talking about the Trailblazing Women of Western New York Monument Project. They are on display at Old Erie County Hall here in downtown Buffalo. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.